It is time for the week that was, a very special edition, you'd have to say, of the week that was in these social distancing times. And joining me in our boardroom here at Mix 104.9, in a very spacious boardroom, we have got the Minister for Health, Natasha Files. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
And we've got Leah Finocchiaro, the Opposition Leader. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie, and good morning, listeners.
And we've also got Jerry Wood, the Independent Member for Nelson. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Katie. Can you hear me there?
I can hear you over here.
I can just see you.
We've tried to make sure we're all spaced out, as we know that it is so very important to adhere to the rules and regulations that are in place to ensure that everybody stays as healthy as possible. And really, that is the topic of discussion this morning. We will talk about the latest update on coronavirus. We know that four Territorians and a Queenslander have returned positive tests for coronavirus in the Northern Territory overnight. The four Territorians, a couple from Katherine and a couple from Central Australia, along with a Queensland woman transiting through Darwin, had all returned from overseas travel. Minister, do we know where they had travelled from?
So, Katie, these details emerged last night. So what we're seeing with the testing for the coronavirus is the laboratories run it in batches of tests. So we see the advice I've got is around 4 to 5 batches each day. So that's why we're getting, you know, the numbers coming through together. It's the testing process. We were advised, we put out that statement last night, and following your program, I'll be briefed on these cases and we'll provide further information to the public. We want to make sure that the public is getting information in a timely manner, that there are more cases, but we also need to respect the processes of the Centre for Disease Control. They need to get the information of the flights, where these people have been, but all of them are international travellers. This is a really important point for Territorians. They have come from overseas, and so we believe we're not seeing that community transmission of the coronavirus, that these are cases that have been imported, and that these people should be following those guidelines of isolation.
And look, we're going to talk about the impact that this is having on people in a financial and certainly in terms of the economy in a few minutes' time. But what I really want to focus on right now is the health side of things. And when you look at, we hear a lot of discussion about this curve and whether we're sort of approaching the curve and when we're going to get to that curve and that upward trend. If we are going to see that curve in the Northern Territory, when do you anticipate that we'll see it?
So the Northern Territory is, we believe, 2 or 3 weeks behind even the Eastern Seaboard in terms of our cases. We've seen globally, and I haven't had the latest figure today, Katie, but yesterday it was over 450,000 people around the world have been diagnosed with coronavirus. Many people have recovered from that, and tragically we've seen many deaths. What we have done in Australia is Australia has put in place those restrictions around international travel, and then the Northern Territory has gone out, and the Chief Minister announced this, and we saw it, our borders closed down.
Yep.
We're also creating bubbles, isolation within the Northern Territory, and so we saw that overnight with the remote communities under the Federal Biosecurity Act completely locked down. So these are measures to stop that community transmission, and if we do see cases, we are confining them to particular areas. This is such a global disease because people don't know they're carrying it, and before they realise they're ill, they've passed that on to many other people.
Well, and one of the interesting things that I was reading yesterday was actually out of The Australian, where you've got Melbourne socialites and people in these pockets of different parts of Australia who've spread it then to each other.
So, Katie, it's interesting how this disease illness has started in China, we believe, but what we're seeing in America, in terms of that spread, and then yes, we have seen it into areas of and talking to other health ministers, they've seen it in pockets of their community. For example, Sydney, I think that they've changed the testing criteria now, that if you're in those eastern suburbs, that Bondi area, and you're symptomatic with with the symptoms of a sore throat, cold type illness, they will test you now, whereas if you're in another area of Sydney, they won't, because we've had so many cases in that area.
I think what's really important is the clarity of the message. A lot of feedback I'm getting is that people don't feel like it's clear, or they understand what, for example, locking down our borders means. And so I think it's really important, and I completely empathise and understand that for the Territory Government, you know, this situation is rapidly evolving, and my comments are purely to be constructive. But I think Territorians and a lot of people listening out there will feel like like they don't know what border lockdown means, and they're concerned around whether or not people who are able to continue to travel into the territory are actually following those self-quarantine processes. So perhaps, Natasha, it's a good opportunity to clarify that for people, because it is causing some concern.
Yes, there's so many messages and it's evolving and rapidly moving each day, even within a day. Information that you receive in the morning by after lunch is outdated. Essentially, if you feel unwell, stay at home. That is the first step. So even if you've got a slight sore throat, a cough, any of those, stay at home, because even if it's not the coronavirus, which is most likely not to be, you're protecting the border community. If you have travelled overseas, you must isolate for 14 days. If you have travelled interstate, you must isolate for 14 days. And then in terms of remote communities, we essentially have locked those communities down. So only community members can be there, and there's measures in place. So it's that simple, I suppose, three steps around that travel. You need to isolate, and if you're not feeling well.
We've got a question from a listener here, and it says, hi, Katie, can you please ask the Minister of People, interstate people, if they can self-isolate at the Howard Springs facility?
So Howard Springs, and I was out there earlier in the week, and we're talking about this off-air, Katie, as it is in the member for Nelson's electorate, Jerry's electorate, but Howard Springs is designed for us when we start to see cases rise, which we haven't seen, and we need to put people that don't need to be in hospital for their medical care, they can be at the Howard Springs site.
I think that's Jerry. Jerry, is that you beeping over there? Is that you telling us it's your turn?
It's not my pacemaker, that's for sure. No, it's not my pacemaker there, Katie. Look, one of the concerns I've been, you know, I've had a number of people ring me about a whole range of things regarding coronavirus. There's a few people saying we just should lock down the territory bank. We've got the border controls there. Anyone coming in should be have to not only self-isolate, but they're concerned that people are not being judged checked to see whether they're actually doing it. And I think I heard on the radio today someone said, oh, I saw someone get off the plane and went off to the supermarket first and got a carton of beer.
We're hearing a lot of those stories, people saying that, hey, you know, they're supposed to be self-isolating, but they've stopped at Woolies or they've gone to the pharmacy or they've, you know, taken the long way home to go and pick up everything they need and come into contact with goodness knows how many people.
And I think that it's important to understand in that situation, what are the people supposed to be doing? I mean, I've had exactly the same feedback and concern. If you are getting off a flight or coming across the border and you're going to go home and self-isolate, what is the protocol around you being able to access what you need to self-isolate? Because obviously there's that critical concern around then that potential for it to spread.
So in terms of the isolation, under the Public and Environmental Health Act, it is up to 400 penalty units or a $62,000 fine. Police, we saw yesterday in Victoria the results of their spot checks, but police are doing work here. But we also have environmental health are out there doing that work, ensuring that we have compliance. But the measure is clear. If you come in from interstate or overseas, go straight home. And then there are measures in place to make sure that you can get those items you need.
Jerry, what are they saying to, I mean, what are your what are people saying to you aside from they either want total lockdown or they're worried about people not self-isolating?
That's one of the issues.
Yep.
Another issue that some people are saying, look, if we can get rid of the number of coronavirus cases and we can have a waiting period after they're finished. Now, of course, there's an extra couple come on board today, which puts it further back.
Mm.
And they're saying if we've got border control and we can have a period after that where there's no more coronavirus reported, can we start to bring the economy back a little bit? Mm. For instance, can we have coffee shops open? Can we, you know, allow some things to start up? Could we have junior sport? Because the federal government put out a series of guidelines just a couple of weeks ago about how you could have junior sport, parents, referees, players only. And there's an issue not just of the physical health of people, but the mental health of people as well. I'm not saying we shouldn't be cautious. I'm a bit worried about having to line up with everything everybody else does. And I know there's a thing on the news this morning saying, oh, no, we all should do the same thing. We're the first to lock, except for Tasmania, we're the first to lock our borders down. We haven't got many coronavirus. We haven't got body-to-body corona contact. So I hope we've got a little bit of flexibility. Because I spoke to people yesterday at Coolinga, and You know, one business there. I'll tell what the business is because they need the business. That was the muffin. I'm trying to think of the
muffin
name.
Muffin break.
Sorry, there. They had 11 people. They got the manager and one other person now. I spoke to the people at the new Coolinga tavern. They don't have takeaway liquor, so they just have takeaways and nothing else. And that's only a fairly brand new facility. So he's had to put off all his staff practically. And it's heartbreaking. So if there can be some flexibility, and it has to be done with caution, and if something breaks out, well, we close it down again.
So, Jerry, I think we're a few weeks away potentially from what you're talking about. So right now we need to stop the potential spread of coronavirus. And so if we can, we have isolated Australia. There is no international travellers, and Australians aren't being allowed to travel overseas. That's the first step. You isolate the Northern Territory, and then you isolate communities within that, and then we will know in the next 3 to 4 weeks, because it takes 14 days, clinically, the advice is, for the coronavirus to appear. So we don't know if we have got community transmission yet from those cases that we've seen. And then potentially a few weeks down the track, but these measures are being taken to protect the health of Territorians, and we want to shorten this because we know how much businesses are hurting.
So realistically, in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we're going to have a clearer idea as to whether there is community transmission or not. I think the big debate that's coming up now, though, and Jerry's touched on this, is what people are so worried about is whether they're going to be able to hang on for that long in terms of business owners, businesses. We are going to talk about the impact that this is having on Northern Territory business.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
You are listening to The Week That Was. I am this morning joined by the Health Minister, Natasha Files, the Opposition Leader, Leo Fenocchiaro, and Jerry Wood, the Independent Member for Nelson. A few messages coming through. A lot of people wondering about the border control. I've got one here. It says, "Hi, Katie, we're long-term Territorians and have just sold our house at auction. We own a house in South Australia and are planning on driving to SA after settlement in 2 weeks. Can we get across the NT and SA border okay? We don't want to drive down and find out we can't get across. We know we'll need to self-isolate in SA on arrival. Is it the same rules all around Australia?" And I think this is a big point of contention and concern at this point.
There is so much information out there, Katie, and people do need to, and I suggest, send it via email so they can get the exact points. But if they were entering, and obviously I know the Territory legislation better than I know the South Australia, but if you're entering the Northern Territory with a place of residence to go to, you will be allowed entry, and then you will need to isolate for the 14 days, and police will monitor that. They will have the information. And you are allowed, this is a point we were talking about, fair around the transiting. So there's people saying, why are people being allowed in terms of flying in from America potentially to Brisbane and then up to Darwin? And equally, you know, and it's difficult because the coronavirus, to transmit, you need to be symptomatic is the clinical advice. And so we want people to get home and then isolate at home. If you're trying to live out of a suitcase in a hotel in Brisbane, you are more likely, you know, you need to quarantine, you need to isolate, but that is difficult when you're trying to do that. And so it's getting people home, and then if they potentially get sick, they're in their home port.
You know, I mentioned the other day in Parliament about what South Koreans were doing, and they obviously are tracking people via their telephone. Now, I know that people can still get around
Singapore's
that.
Singapore's doing that as well.
And I think that's certainly something we should do. There was a mention in the NT News, I think, the day before yesterday that the police said, well, we are, and they didn't explain
that.
It. We're looking at other means of tracking people, but I think that that is really important.
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, only one person comes in with coronavirus and is not staying where they said
they
would.
Because, of course, we're hearing anecdotally, obviously, but that people are seeing people out and about at the shops, et cetera, who are meant to be in self-isolation. And, of course, with the current rules, and we were just talking off-air, if you do come across the border and your home is Darwin, but say you're driving in from Queensland, you will be allowed passage to get to Darwin. So, inevitably, you're going to need fuel, you're going to need food.
And how does that work
if we're not monitoring these
people?
Well,
this is exactly right. I guess the other part of this is that we're really putting our safety into the hands of of people and hoping that they're following all the right rules and doing the appropriate things. You know, we've even got a situation where those that have come back in that do indeed have the coronavirus, you're wanting to make sure that they're then not in contact with other family members that could potentially spread that further on. And we'd spoken about this earlier in the week in the context of our schools. And I know that our schools have been a massive point of contention, whether they should indeed remain opened, whether we should still be sending our kids. I know that it's a topic that I'm grappling with on a personal level, thinking, well, do I continue to send my children to school when the advice is at the moment it is still okay to send them? And, you know, it's obviously okay and we're being encouraged if you're considered an essential service. But even then, there's a lot of parents saying, well, what is considered an essential service at this point?
Well, I think it was the Tasmanian, the Minister for Education down there, again, on the radio this morning. I thought he had the more sensible approach. He said, look, if parents cannot afford to keep their kids at home, probably because they've got jobs. I mean, the last thing you want is people then having to lose their job because they've got to look after their children. But
absolutely.
So he's sort of giving people the option, all right, if you can look after your children at home, please do.
Yeah.
But if you can't, we don't want you to sort of lose your job. So he wasn't just talking about essential services. He was saying, parents, we know you might have to have a job, so we'll give you that choice. And I thought that that was a sensible outcome.
I thought bringing forward the school holidays a week was a very sensible outcome as well. Yesterday from the Northern Territory government, doing the ring around to schools, it appears that communication is flowing quite well to school principals, and to their absolute credit, they're all gearing up to be able to provide learning in a whole range of online and other types of platforms, which is an absolute testament to them. And even I'm hearing, even in the really early years, like your three ELCs and things like that, are going to be able to deliver programs to kids. So it's rapidly evolving, but I think that was a sensible move by the Territory government yesterday.
So, Katie, these are unprecedented times. We know these measures are tough. We know that they're impacting upon businesses.
Yep.
But this is about the health and safety and the lives of Territorians that we are talking about. In terms of schools, it is difficult, but the health advice is that the schools remain open. But until the end of term one, parents have that choice whether they choose. And there's various reasons, underlying health issues within the child, within the family, but also from the teacher's perspective, because I think that, you know, we're worrying about our families and our children. There's teachers who are in the same situation, but I know that there's support and the principals are working. They are seeing reduced numbers of students in classes, and the schools are working to help teachers that might need to isolate themselves. So it is unprecedented times. There's no rule book for the coronavirus.
No,
and as soon as
thing.
We put rules in place, the coronavirus jumps ahead. And I think, you know, we were just talking off air, Parliament on Tuesday felt like a week ago. As we said, things are just changing so rapidly.
They're changing incredibly rapidly. Now, I want to have a discussion about the way in which this is impacting the economy. And there is some who are arguing out there in the community that the restrictions that are being put in place are more crippling than what the effects of the coronavirus could be. And I think it's probably easy for us to say that at this point in time because we're not broadly seeing the health implications right now. But that's not to say that we're not going to down the track at some point. But there is no doubt that there are so many that are finding it so tough at this point in time. I was saying to you all off air this morning that I got a message from a tradesperson earlier this morning who had said to me that just very recently he was nominated as a finalist for an award in his field, and yesterday he found out that he was no longer employed. You know, we're talking about people here, we're talking about businesses here who would never ever be in the situation that they're in if we were not in these unprecedented times. And I think that that's the really sad part. We've got businesses that are scaling back. If they are able to stay open, they're doing things like asking staff to take a 20% pay decrease. You've got some businesses who are saying, okay, well, we're going to need to cut your week down from a 5-day working week to a 3-day working week or a 4-day working week. All of these measures are being put in place in an effort to really try to keep going so that there at the other side, but it's becoming harder and harder. I know that over in the UK, I was speaking to my brother this morning, who's in a situation where they've got the government, the federal government, or their government is chipping in 80% of the wage, so that if you are if you are indeed looking like you're going to have to be laid off because of the coronavirus crisis, the government's chipping in that 80%, and then your employer's paying the 20%, so they can keep you employed.
So, Katie, worldwide, the figures are now over 500,000 people have the coronavirus, and Australia has gone over 3,000 people. And I know it's really difficult for businesses, for people to understand what is happening. It's hard for our minds to grapple with. In terms of supporting the economy and jobs, the government, we've rolled out the $65 million Jobs Rescue and Recovery Plan about keeping jobs open, keeping those shops open, keeping jobs in place. The federal government, the chief minister right now is in National Cabinet. The federal government has rolled out two stimulus plans. I understand they're working on another one, because that is exactly it. It's about supporting businesses to get through this so that when we come out the other side, that there are the foundations to rebuild our economy.
Are we at that point now? I mean, do we need a situation here, as expensive as it would be for the federal government to do this, where they're really throwing everything at this, and the federal government really needs to bring in a wage subsidy so that we can try to keep people employed?
I think all options need to be on the table, Katie. I mean, we're putting out packages around small business. We're trying our hardest to help those small businesses, but there's only so many levers that we can pull. We potentially, as a nation, and you pointed to the UK, they've made that decision, and that would be a question for the federal government.
I know that Territory Alliance leader Terry Mills has issued a statement this morning saying that they believe that that if there's employees who would otherwise have been had their employment terminated due to COVID-19, Territory Alliance is calling for a 75% of their wages, up to a maximum of $6,000 per employee per month, to be paid by the federal government. Is that a good idea?
Look, we need to be exploring everything. I think the Territory government have done a very good job with some stimulus packages that they've pulled out. But because of the rapid changing environment, they are going to have to be even more agile than they already are. And that's, not a criticism, but a reality.
Yep.
Of course, earlier in the week, or maybe it was late last week, we were talking about a voucher system for the hospitality industry, giving Territorians vouchers to encourage that spend, recognising that many of them are hurting because they've lost their job. Things have already moved, not past it, of course, that would still be welcome, but things are evolving so rapidly, and that measure hasn't come out. So we are going to have to be more agile than we've ever been before. We would like to see payroll tax relief. That would put cash back in the pockets of a lot of businesses who can then support their employees. I mean, I was talking to a business person this morning who laid off 40 staff this week, another one yesterday around 30. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking. We need to be doing what we can. And what's heartening about all of this is the innovation we're seeing. I think it's an absolute credit to those businesses who are really innovating in this space.
I mean, Filesy, are we at a point here, though, where really, if we're talking about so many in the private sector doing all that they can to keep people employed but struggling with it, are we at a point where maybe the federal government and also the Northern Territory government need to look at savings measures themselves, where maybe our public servants have to take a 20% pay decrease, and that money that we're saving then goes into the private sector? So rather than just having the public servants still employed, we've got a situation where we've got more people employed across a broad range of areas.
So, Katie, we haven't looked at that. What we have done is we understand that there'll be some sectors of the public service where their work naturally will slow right down, but there's other areas. For example, health. The latest advice I have is that we probably need 200 to 300 additional FTE to help us manage a myriad of issues. Yeah. And so it's redeploying people. We need certainty. The public service, with, you know, the numbers of people that it employs, and if all of those people can get out and support local, if they can buy a coffee, it's trying to keep those mechanisms in place. So at the moment, we're looking at the redeployment. We're also looking at making sure that people have got the flexibility within their work situation so that we can keep them employed.
So at this point, now is not the time to cut.
That's not what we are focused on. We are focused on making sure that we've got the resources, but they're shifting around to where we need them.
I just want to go back to what you're talking about before.
Yep.
Obviously, if someone loses their job, they've got to pay rent. I spoke to a business the other day who's also got a mortgage on their property, the industrial property and their house, and they're struggling now. So I think there's opportunities for the idea of a rent moratorium, both domestic and or residential and in commercial, if that's possible. And I know it's been discussed in the United Kingdom. And also, I noticed that I was reading the Commonwealth Bank's big advertisement in the paper the other day. They've sort of got a 3-month moratorium on the payback of loans, but they haven't given a moratorium on the interest. And I think a lot of people are concerned that that should also be included. So if people are out of work, we know they can get some money. But if you then can stop them having to pay rent for the time being, even 3 months, people can possibly live on that small amount of money for food and necessities. But if you've got that burden taken away from you, at least it's something that I think would be positive.
I think one other element, and I was speaking with a business yesterday, and Tasha and I spoke about it, is repurposing businesses as well. Businesses who traditionally perhaps manufacture or produce a certain product or are in a certain industry can actually reframe and refocus their business to support things. So whether it is with hand sanitizer, for example, I spoke with someone yesterday who said a lot of businesses are moving to try and develop a way to produce hand sanitizer given, you know, the shortage, or whether it's that PPE that we're all talking about that's being in shortage. So where we can repurpose businesses and get them, producing things that we're really going to need, that's going to keep them in work as well. So there's those opportunities.
And we're also the NT Jobs hub. So that's Woolworths, a need people to go and work for them. We've talked about, and this is probably Jerry Wood's forte, not so much mine, but the fruit picking, so yeah, it might absolutely not be the job you want, but it's a job that will pay the bills through the difficult next few months, and then our economy, we can rebound post-coronavirus.
The horticultural industry is a variable industry. That's the only problem with it. So people will get jobs from time to time. So, but that might be able to be all that's needed to keep people in the territory and get through this
My
time.
Understanding so I is think there's 2,500 jobs that's right. a shortfall
yeah,
right
so
now.
So people need to be willing to travel, willing to bend over. If you're picking up melons, it's a hard job.
Yep.
But people, if they're really earnest about what they're concerned about what's happening, I think they need to take up those jobs.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was, brought to you by BTC Constructions, from residential, commercial to project management. They cover all aspects of construction. We are much further spaced out than usual. And if you do want to send us a text, most certainly you can. Quite a few of them coming through this morning. I might just read a couple out. There's one here that says, "Hi, Katie. I know someone who flew in from East Timor. There was no one at the airport explaining they had to self-isolate. When they did ask the customs at the airport, is there paperwork? Are we meant to be self-isolating? They were told, don't worry about it. We're okay here. What information is the minister receiving?" is the question.
So that has been a concern that's been raised with us. Border Force are responsible for the airports and making sure that that information is handed out but also collected. And we certainly, I have raised that with the Federal Health Minister to pass on to his colleagues, that we need to make sure that anyone entering the Northern Territory, whether they're coming in via road, and we have police giving out that information, or arriving internationally, that Border Force are passing on that information so everybody understands their responsibilities.
I think it's so incredibly important that all of this information is being relayed in exactly the way that it needs to be, so that we can make sure that the impact here in the territory is minimal. We've got another message here. It says, "Hi, Katie. I understand the issue with rents, but landlords still have other bills besides mortgages to pay. And for some, these rents are their only source of income and are not entitled to any stimulus payment."
Look, I understand that too. And, landlords aren't all rich people.
No.
That's where I think the government has to come in. If it says there's a moratorium, then it also has to look at the people who will be affected by the moratorium.
Absolutely.
And assist them. Yes, I wouldn't be asking for a blanket. And I was speaking to a commercial company yesterday who said, well, we've got a bank loan too for our business, and they're not going to give us any relief as well. So in principle, I'm saying that that's what should happen, but it would need the government to look at it, and from a practical point of view, because you certainly don't want landlords in financial difficulty as well. Otherwise, you're just making matters worse. So it needs, I think, to be done, but I think it needs assistance from the federal government.
One of the other messages I've got here, and this is a great one, it says, "Hi, Katie, my wife works for government in Darwin City. Her department has been putting money in each day and picking a different takeaway for lunch, trying to help the restaurants out in town. If they cut her wages, this will stop." So that one there from Brett. And Brett, thank you for sending that message. I think that there's so many of us out there who are trying our best to support local business. And I know even for myself, we're all in uncertain times. times, but we're trying our best to do the same as well. There's, you know, these business people, they're not just business people who own, you know, who own local restaurants. They're people that you actually know and you become friends with.
They're part of our community, Katie, and everybody in our community we know is hurting, whether it's anxiety around people with underlying health conditions, whether it's friends who have lost their job, whether it's business owners that, you know, you visit regularly and you feel like they almost, they are part of your lives. So this is unprecedented, this health emergency, and we need to band together like Territorians know how to do in a crisis.
And following that social distancing and spending money if you can, and I absolutely acknowledge many people cannot, but for those of you who can, it's so important because these small business owners, they're not just business people, and often, you know, they get tarred with the big rich business person brush. It's just not the case. They're our employers. You know, they're the people out there every day keeping other people in jobs. And so anything we can do to support jobs by spending is really important.
Another thing that really, I've got to say, peed me off. I was going to use a more extreme word, but was this story that we saw that, well, the Chief Minister's launched a furious attack on anti-fracking campaigners for spreading blatant lies about FIFO workers and clogging up government phone lines in the middle of the coronavirus crisis. Now, East Coast activist group GetUp, they started a campaign this week claiming that companies like Origin Energy were flouting quarantine measures in the NT and putting the lives of remote community residents at risk. Now, the campaign claimed that fracking has been deemed essential in the territory, but the NT government said that is simply not true. What is the case here, Filesy?
Oh, the claims that companies are letting staff travel into communities, visit shops and not use quarantine measures and putting lives at risk are grossly inaccurate. They're wrong. We've got the strictest protections in place. We were the first to put in place measures to protect remote communities. My understanding is that no onshore gas company has exemptions in place, and actually they are suspended operations during the coronavirus.
Well, and we've got to remember as well that our resource industry, whether you're a fan of fracking or not, whether you're a fan of any type of mining or not, our resource industry employs people, and those people need to continue to work. The minute they're not working, well, who do you think's going to have to, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to be lining up at Centrelink with the rest of us.
And Katie, do you know what's really disappointing about this? It's around the scaremongering during a time when we just talked about how anxious our community is, and particularly our vulnerable Territorians, and particularly people from remote communities where English is a second language and information doesn't flow as easily as it might on the East Coast.
Well, sometimes those people in remote communities are the ones these people aim their message at to stir up trouble.
Yeah.
Because I heard that report on ABC that somebody in Elliot was worried about Origin, I think, travelling out to their exploration sites. Well, Origin came back and said, we don't have anyone go to any community. We bus them straight to the site. So they're not in contact with any of the community. But you just mentioned the resources. But
it's it's lies by the sound of it.
And it's just so annoying because at the moment, I know again you heard, what's keeping our economy going at the moment is a low dollar price against our dollar value against the American dollar. So our exports of things like iron ore and that to China and other places are so important at the moment. They're more important than ever because we're going to be in a lot of debt when we get through this. We need to make sure those resource companies are still operating.
We're going to have to take a quick break. We are heading very close to 10 o'clock. You are, of course, listening to Mix 104.9's 360. You are listening to The Week That Was, and I am joined this morning by Jerry Wood, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files. We usually have an extra panel member, but unfortunately, we've got to make sure that we are social distancing.
Your team has done a great job, Katie. They have taken us out of that small studio and got us all spread out in the boardroom.
Oh, and a big shout out to everybody that's helping out so that we can do this up here. Greg has stayed on after brekkie to panel us. The promotions team have made sure that we could move up here.
Thanks, Greg.
So a big thanks to everybody for really doing their bit to help us out. Now, look, I want to talk about the fact that the opposition status changed again throughout the week. I said this last week, it was terrible timing, I thought, on Territory Alliance's part to take opposition status last week. I thought it was pretty terrible timing as well this week, really, for it to change again. But Leah, I think that you wanted to make sure that this happened really once and for all.
Look, Tuesday was a really important day in the Parliament. We passed some very significant legislation that provided very broad-ranging powers to the Territory Government, which requires a lot of trust on their part to be transparent. I mean, a lot of it was around finance and completely changing the way in which we do those things. That was absolutely critical. We also passed other legislation, and then there was a ballot, a Democratic vote to put this issue to bed once and for all, and the result is the result. We're getting on with the job. People want us focused on COVID-19. We must be constructive in how we get the territory through this.
Did you three collude to make this happen?
No. So Leah moved a motion. As the government, we said we're not voting in that. We will allow the motion to proceed, but we don't believe it's appropriate for the government to decide its opposition.
Jerry, did you collude with Leah and Gary to make this happen?
I didn't do any colluding. Leah did speak to me, and I explained to her the other day that I thought it was a bad timing because of all the coronavirus, and I was thinking it wasn't actually going to come up before Parliament. I was basically asked for my opinion. That's what the vote was about. And Labor, I must admit, it sort of had two bob each way here. It allowed the motion to be put, but then wouldn't vote on the motion. So I stood up to at least tell people why I voted, why I didn't. No one else did. Except Leah, of course, it was her motion.
So why did you vote the way that you did, Jerry? Because I think no doubt that Territory Alliance are pretty annoyed with what's gone on, given that they've got three members and the CLP's only got two.
As I explained, and it wasn't personal and it was a difficult decision, but I was being asked my opinion, basically who should be the opposition. And I felt, and I'd said that some time ago when Robin Lamley all of a sudden changed her mind, that she didn't like the Territory Alliance, and then 1 week later she did. And I just felt that was an opposition that had to some extent been contrived to get the job of being opposition. And I didn't think that was, to some extent what Northern Territory people would expect when it came to good governance. Now, people, I have been criticised for my decision. I could have easily just stepped out of Parliament and said, too bad, but I felt that the opposition the Territory Alliance missed an opportunity to say, look, we won't push this any further. We'll just stay as a party in the Northern Territory, because we only had a few more sitting days to go. And we'll say, well, look, we'll not push this particular issue about being opposition because we think the state of the territory at the moment is more important than what we want. But I was asked my opinion. I gave it because I felt the opposition Territory Alliance had got the numbers simply by Robin Lamley, as the member for Araluen, 1 week saying, I have nothing to do with Territory Alliance, the next week saying, I support them, and that to me sounded a bit sort of sus.
Well, and look, I think whether people agree or disagree with you, Jerry, one thing that I always respect about you is that you always say what you always tell the truth and you say exactly what you mean. I admire that. I think it's a really important thing, and it's something that sometimes we don't see in politics. So whether people agree with it or disagree. Look, the reason I think that this is such an important topic is the fact that we are still heading for the polls in August at this point. August 22nd, I believe, is the date. So we're still heading to the polls on August 22. That is despite the fact that we're not going to have a budget handed down in May. So nobody is really going to know the true state of the finances when they head to the polls. Now, given the fact that the economy, long before this coronavirus was an issue, the economy was our number one issue, I think that it's going to be really difficult for people to sort of to vote in the way that they usually would, taking all of this into account.
So the federal government pushed their budget until October, I believe. They suspended federal parliament until August.
But they're obviously not going to the polls.
Correct. And so, but where the important point comes in, I think it's 75% of our funding into our territory budget comes from the federal government. So we can't prepare a territory budget without knowing the facts from the federal budget. But what the Treasurer has said is that there will be updates, because I think that is really important. Territorians need to see, are we spending the money in health? Are we spending it in police to tackle the coronavirus? Where is that money being spent? So the Treasurer has committed to providing those updates, but this is very unusual, unprecedented times.
It's unbelievable. I guess the big concern, though, as well, is still at this point, we're all hoping that obviously that the coronavirus issue is going to be subsided by August, but it's hard to tell at this point.
point. Yeah. You know, the election's set down for the 22nd of August. We are planning for that, working towards that. We don't want to move that date. I think the Chief Minister said, you know, that's his number one. The Territorians elected us for 4 years. They did not elect us for a day longer than that. So that is very important.
It raises an important question, though. When I said earlier what we did in Parliament on Tuesday requires a lot of trust in government, it really does. The government have committed to quarterly reporting on the budget, but we don't know what that looks like. We don't know if that's going to be some sort of published document. We don't know if that's going to be reporting into the Parliament or the processes around that. It is very important, and I said this in Parliament, that we recognise and want to empower the government to be agile during this unprecedented time. We don't want them burdened by red tape. Equally, this is not a free ride. They must be open. They must be transparent. They must be publishing that detail. And unfortunately, the way they had driven our economy so down over the last 4 years means there's no meat on the bones. You know, we don't have that resilience built in at this time. But we have to spend. But this government needs to be open with the people.
I've got a bit of a concern about the date. Not that I want to keep going.
No, I was going to say, Jerry, you're meant to be retiring, aren't you?
That's right. But I still have a concern more in remote communities how this would work. I mean, one of the basic fundamentals of our democratic process is voting. And so people need to know, especially our bush, who are the candidates. I mean, there's going to be restrictions on candidates getting around. Is it harder for smaller parties to get around because of the restrictions? Is that fair? So there are other issues out there about people congregating as well, especially out where you've got mobile polling booths and that. My concern was you may be able to do it properly in the more urbanised areas, but out in the remote communities, which are just as important, how would you do it on the ground? Now, I understand the Electoral Commissioner is looking at it, but I think if there's some issues there, we need to look at that now before the time comes to see whether we need an extension.
I think that's a very, very sound point that you make there. Well, we are going to have to wrap up for the week. Jerry Wood, the Independent Member for Nelson, thank you so very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Katie. And if you're out in the Coolinga area, please, or even the Humpty Doo area, please pop into some of those shops that where you can't dine in anyway and get a good old takeaway. And please support those small businesses. They desperately need help.
They absolutely do. Leah Finocchiaro, Opposition Leader, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, and thank you to your listeners. And, you know, this is just such a challenging and difficult time. And for those of you who have, you know, lost your work, you know, our thoughts and hearts are with you. And, you know, I think everyone who can make a difference in your lives is working overtime to
I just forgot to say Howard Springs too.
And of course, Natasha Files, the Health Minister, thanks so much for your time in what's very busy, busy moments for you.
Katie, thank you. And I just, something you were talking about yesterday with our Deputy Chief Health Officer, the welfare group, I'll leave this information with you, but there is a welfare group to help Territorians meet their 14-day self-quarantine requirements. I think we've seen an amazing outpouring of support in our community, people messaging, there's been social media pages set up about, you know, going and helping people out, buying their groceries, etc. But for those people who do genuinely have no support options, the welfare group can help with essential needs such as groceries and prescription medication. And there is a website which I will leave with you to put up on your
Facebook
and stuff.
I thought that was such a great thing to hear yesterday for those that do need that assistance. A big thank you to our sponsors, BTC Constructions as well. From residential, commercial to project management, they cover all aspects of construction. You have been listening to The Week That Was. Thanks so very much for your company.